Welcome to episode 30 of Pennies in the Well, being recorded on New Year's Eve of 2011. Yes, it is December 31st, 2011, and I'm sneaking in this podcast episode before the end of the year so that, well, you don't think that I've died or I don't think that I have completely wussed out for the last 2 months of the year. Oh, wait, I kind of did. I am here. I am alive. It's been an interesting couple of months. I have missed you. I've missed podcasting, but clearly not quite enough to get off my ass and actually do it. And why, you may ask? Well, in short, it's been a brutal couple of months. I re-injured my back a little bit, in some ways worse than before, because it was two discs this time, not one, but better than before because I got it under control with minimal drugs and just better behavior, and I'm doing so much better than I was a year ago at this time. I can't say the same for some friends of mine, which is unfortunate. Much love out to anyone who is suffering on any level, because I feel your pain. I felt much pain. In fact, I was having such a great end to my 2011 year from hell that I also am now back on antidepressants and seeing my therapist again for the first time in a couple of years. Yes, it has been such a fun time since I last spoke with you. Last time, I feel like I'm suddenly doing a TV show or a 70s soap opera or something. Previously on Pennies in the Well, or as we last left Saturn, Pennies in the Well, she had just returned from Salem, Massachusetts, where she had gone to the Pagan Podkin Supermoot with her best buddy and coven mate Holly, and they had a most fabulous time that involved a lot of difficulties with the GPS and some truly intensive shopping experiences. The reason I bring this up, even though that is much long time ago, is in part because I never really talked about the event much at all, and I don't plan to talk a lot about it today either. But there are a few things I wanted to mention. One is for the people that, the fans, it's so strange to say that word, but the people that I met, podcasters, podcast listeners, everybody, a true, true joy to meet you. Can't say that enough. My pleasure, my honor. Secondly, I curse, yet love, Araya the Sphinx, for she introduced Holly and I to one of her favorite stone places. Yes, this is a little mini stoner report for all you fellow stoners out there. If you have not yet checked out this website, you need to. It is treasuremountainmining.com. That's right, treasuremountainmining.com. And I'm not spelling it for you because if you can't spell it, we have other things to talk about. Right, so Araya actually showed us, because she knows where the physical place is located, because it's in her neck of the woods. Sorry, because if you ever listen to her podcast, she's usually podcasting from the woods of somewhere in Massachusetts. Anyhow, so we actually got to physically see the place, and I think we died. I think our previous souls died there in their storeroom and storage floors, and new cells were reborn in the pure glory of stoneness that we were surrounded by. If you love stones, seriously, I cannot begin to cover it. Their display room had pieces, specimens, sizes, and types that of what seemed normal stones, but I have never seen them like that before. Oh my god. Their storage room in the basement was massive. Absolutely fucking massive, with the most amazing selection of things. For instance, I came away with a meteorite, which actually a little card that tells me when it was sighted as falling to Earth. So I have a piece of metal that was off this planet originally. It was out in space before it came here and into my grubby little hands. Oh, so stunning to hold it. If you work with stones, oh, you really got to try holding a piece of meteorite. And a few other things, and then the other piece I'm going to actually share was a piece of lightning-struck quartz, which, wow, that is also amazing. Yes, literally struck by lightning, this piece of quartz. And they had at least one or two boxes of those. So that was great. We had a fun time hanging out with Araya one day on our crazy trip over to, well, the East Coast. While we were in Salem, I do want to mention another store just because it was different from most of the stores that we went into in Salem. Most of them there had a kind of a kitschy feel, kind of a, I don't know how to put it. It was standard. It had the standard stuff. It had its standard witchy fare. So, you know, kind of the kitschy stuff, kind of the fun stuff, and then some interesting stuff for, you know, practitioners. For the most part, while there was the odd thing I found in the odd store that I wanted to buy, I'm pretty well stocked after 20 years and didn't necessarily feel a need to buy a lot of things. Okay, the Maleficent hat was totally different. I saw the Maleficent hat and went, that is mine, it is coming home with me. And I did some fabulous Christmas or Yule shopping or birthday shopping for people. But the one store that I went into that was just, oh my God, was New Aeon. That's N-U space A-E-O-N. It was down by the waterfront, and this wasn't a place that was catering to tourists and dabbling for practitioners. This was a practitioner heaven. It was, God, the amount of money I dropped in that place. But I picked up things that, like, I picked up a wire mask that fit me perfectly, that is one of a kind that I will never find anywhere else. They had statuary, actually, so did another place in Salem. Had deity statuary that was fabulous, the jewelry stunning, and their backroom temple was not yet finished, but we got a little sneak peek, and I have to say, I want one just like that. Creating sacred space in that wonderful way is astounding. So those were a couple of the highlights from our Salem trip that didn't make it necessarily into the Mad Hatter episode about tips for having a really good time on road trips. That's where I wanted to cover on Salem. I've covered kind of the 2 months since then have been a roller coaster ride of unpleasantness. The back injury really just made it so that I wasn't spending a lot of time on the computer, or if I did, it's for very short periods of time because, once again, I was to the land of there's standing, there's lying down, there wasn't as much sitting. And when I was sitting, I was just really driving to or from work or doing things I really had to do. So that's my reason for not having put out a podcast for a while. I like to think it's not an excuse, because I'm not looking for excuses or justification or forgiveness. It's just a reason. I'm not prepared yet to disappear from the face of the podcast land, because I still have opinions to share, so and things to impart and things you might enjoy. So today, given that it is New Year's Eve, and New Year's, well, God, if you're like me, there's about 4 or 5 different New Year's throughout the year that you can take, because Samhain's a type of New Year's, and then there's New Year's Eve, the secular one, and there's Chinese New Year, and Holly's, you know, Chinese by birth, so and there's a bit of that that goes on, and there's a couple other ones if you really want to get technical about it. So New Year's is kind of a weird thing, and I don't really get all excited in the let's go out and party, celebrate kind of way, but I do take it as a chance, especially. There's a lot of power built up into that switch from one year to the next. You know, much as we say our spiritual new year may be Samhain, the reality is, for all secular purposes, it's, you know, December 31st of the year switches over from that night. So I want to talk a little bit about not making resolutions. I'm just going to take this chance to talk about making changes and some of the ways that you can help yourself make changes at any point in the year or your life. This is not about New Year's, because there's a lot of pressure on New Year's. It would be like getting a puppy on Christmas Day. It's too much. Trying to make it a New Year's resolution only works if you put some other stuff behind it and if you really, truly, honestly want it. And doing it because you think you need to make a New Year's resolution is a damn stupid reason to do it, in my opinion. Do it because you want to make a change. Is New Year's a good time to stop and evaluate where you've been and what you're doing? Hell fuck yeah! It's a great time to look at your goals and see kind of what it is that you want to, might, you know, maybe accomplish over the next 12 months. That only works if you actually check in throughout the 12 months and see if you're on track with what you wanted to do, if it still actually is important, and it comes right back in the end to, is it a change you truly want to make? Because you don't actually have to make any changes. There's no requirement to make a New Year's resolution. Anyhow, I'm going to take a brief little break. I'm going to play some piece of music, which I haven't actually figured out yet, because I figured I should get off my... Well, it's hard to say getting off my lazy ass when it was usually lying down. But getting up, And doing this podcast before the year was over, so it's not as well planned as I may have liked or have been in the past, but it's getting me over that hurdle of, oh my god, I haven't spoken into a microphone in over 2 months. I hope that this mild case of insanity is at least somewhat entertaining for you. I hope the information in the middle of the well section is useful for you. And I have some plans for some new segments and such that have been percolating for a while and have been trying to come out for, you know, a good 6 weeks now and just haven't made it due to other conflicts. So enjoy the music and I will see you on the other side. Okay, I won't see you. I will talk to you on the other side, but that seems kind of rude. So let's just go with C. All right.
Down and down.
Welcome back to episode 30 of Pennies in the Well. Yes, that was ABBA and their song Happy New Year. Given that it's New Year's Eve, New Year's Eve music seemed the right way to go. Don't mind me, I'm playing. Crap. Yes, that was me knocking things over, and let's see if I broke something I care about. No! Well, you know, it's a New Year's miracle. I'll take it. So, I wanted to first, before we get into the direct main big topic of the day, I wanted to discuss briefly, there's a point, how Arendelle spent its Yule vacation. So, this Yule, my coven and a few friends got together, and we did something slightly different when it came to Yule. Instead of celebrating the returning of the light, which is the typical way of doing Yule, and certainly a good one, this year, we mourned the passing of the dark. Yes, that's right, mourned the passing of the dark. I adore the dark side of the year. I am more at peace, things are more easily dealt with, typically. It is a great time for working magically, for working with the ancestors. I derive great power and spiritual energizing through the dark period of the year. And so when the tides turn, I get a little actually sad about it because I'm never ready for the return into the light and the other half of the year. I never ready for it. And the reason that I bring this up and why it is pertinent to today's topic is because I want to talk a little bit about a book I've been reading called Be Excellent at Anything by Tony Schwartz, S-C-H-W-A-R-T-Z. And the reason that I want to talk about this book, or well, many reasons I want to talk about this book, and it kind of all relates to that getting more out of life thing and making changes effectively. This book, I picked it up because of work, actually. I wanted to pick up some books on time management, and there were two books or topics that came up repeatedly. One is Getting Things Done, and the other one was this book, or, well, there's two books by the same group, and I couldn't tell you which one actually came up. But anyhow, these people also run a website called The Energy Project, and they believe in balancing the four aspects of life. So that would be, you have your body, your mind, your heart, and your spirit. And that these four areas need to be not equally engaged, but they all need to be engaged and regularly. And they need their periods of intensity and they need their periods of rest. And that idea of rest is very core, at least at the beginning of their book. I haven't made it all the way through yet, so you have to bear with me. But they talk about everything in our bodies, in our worlds, in our lives, pulse. And if you are familiar with the Kybalion or Kybalion by the three initiates, and if you're not, go listen to The Infinite and the Beyond with Chris Oropello. His first 8 or 9 episodes dealt with the Kybalion, however you say it, and the ideas contained therein, which are described as being basic hermetic principles, and they include things such as rhythm and polarity and things that relate directly to what I'm talking about here, but I'm not going to get into. So there really is a metaphysical aspect to what I'm talking about, even though this book doesn't go into metaphysical. Even their spiritual aspect, they're talking about things being significant to you. They're not actually talking about God. So this book has nothing to do with God, even though it talks about spirituality. It talks about things being personally meaningful. Mind is about being able to express yourself. Emotions, more into security, about feeling appreciated and cared for. And body is sustainability. So taking care of yourself, renewing yourself so that you're healthy, fit, and resilient, that kind of stuff. This idea of pulsing, going from an active to a rest state, is key for them and key for me. It ties into many things I think I've talked about before. The idea of rest is important. The dark aspect of things is important. we have a society and a culture that focuses on being positive and strong and doing, and forgets that we have to, that sometimes we are negative, and that negative can actually be a good thing. That weakness, see, even just saying weakness, it's a bad word. You don't want to be weak. But being receptive, being calm, being gentle, these are all good things, but they're not strong. So you start to get the idea that, you know, and we have very much a get it done, do more, do more, do more. And we forget that resting and stopping and being reflective is important. Being reflective is intensely important to your ability to progress. If you're constantly doing, but you're never integrating what you learn, then it's never truly becoming part of yourself. And so the point of learning it is not that it's lost, but you're not getting the most effective stuff out of it that you can. Sorry, my words are a little escaping me today. So they talk a lot about first how to kind of build things, how to view things, then how to get at it specifically. They quote a lot of studies on what has actually turned out to be effective, say for professional violinists is a study that has been quoted often, and how the best performers, how they do things differently, what makes them the best performers, and it is not innate talent. Innate talent only takes you so far. It is about building up your skills, and the best way to build your skills is apparently in 90-minute segments and then taking a rest break. Yes, rest break. There you, if you work intensely, it's not about working intensely more. It's about working more intensely. Notice the difference? So not working longer at an intense level, working for a shorter period of time but more intensely, and then taking the break so that you recover from it, so you don't get burnt out, and you're ready to go back at that or something different. And they talk about even recognizing through the week how the days of the week affect how you feel, so that you would do different types of work on a Monday than you would on a Thursday, for instance. So, getting into some of the things that they were suggesting for how to make changes and make them stick. And essentially, they start off with going, you know what? We are creatures of fucking habit. Isn't that the goddamn truth? We do things the way that we do things. And they posit that there is a finite amount of willpower that we have. And every single instance of applied willpower sucks at that reservoir that we have. And it is a finite source. So if you are going on a diet and you're constantly faced with really tasty foods, that will use up much more of your willpower. And it won't be left over to get you to the gym later or to do one of any other number of changes that you want to make. So they talk about how to kind of get around that. So first is recognizing that we are creatures of habit. And they talk about the unbearable automaticity of being. We live lives. When you think about it, you are not thinking through absolutely everything that you're doing. You've habitualized so many things. Getting to work, whether you bus, walk, drive, doesn't matter. It's habitualized. Do you really think about it? Do you put any conscious thought, planning into it? No, you put on your shoes, you go out the door, you do what you do. Checking Facebook, checking Twitter, downloading a podcast. It's the first time you do it, you think about it. The second time, you think not so much. By the time you've been doing it for a while, there's no thought at all. It's just habitualized. Everything that we do becomes habitualized. And it's getting things to that habitual state that will make changes you want to make stick. So, tip number one, well, they have many tips, but I'm going to call it tip number one. Bite off only what you can chew. So make your change realistic. Don't go and try and do something, you know, completely over the top. You don't want to try and radically change your world. Our worlds don't like to change. We don't like to change that easily. We like little baby steps of change. So embrace that. Work on the little steps and only pick one, maybe two things, but really just pick one. If you want to make changes in your life, pick one. Start there. once it's going nicely and it's under control and it's really working for you and it's not taking effort to do anymore, that's when you add another change. If you try and change everything at once, you are going to fail. I've been down this road. And maybe there's like one in a million of us who won't, but for everybody else, you try and do too many things at once, you're going to fail. Been there, failed that. Precision and specificity, point number two. So try to be clear in what you're going to do and set very specific things around it. So don't go, oh, I'm going to learn how to play the guitar. Well, when are you going to learn how to play the guitar? How much time are you going to invest? So the more specific you are, if you actually go, okay, I'm going to learn the guitar by sitting down every Sunday after brunch, because that's the time that I have most easily available. Sunday after brunch, that's when I'm going to sit down and practice my guitar for an hour. And I'm going to do, or half an hour. But you pick the time, you pick the amount of time, you set a specific place. The more specific you get, the more likely you are to follow through. So if you really want it to happen, don't just go, oh, I want it to happen. You have to start thinking about how it's going to happen. Get into the how of it. How are you actually going to make that change happen? Well, to make that change happen, you actually have to do it, which means you have to have a time to do it. You have to have a place to do it. You have to have perhaps tools around doing it. You know, maybe you never get a half an hour to yourself where you can actually just sit and play the guitar. So you have to make that half an hour. You have to plan it out somehow that, you know, maybe you've got kids and it's hubby, sorry, or wife, sorry, a little gender moment there for me considering that I'm female. So spouse, that's much better. Spouse, I need you to take the kids for 40 minutes at this time to this time and, you know, figure it out. Make it clear, specific, something that you can work with. A short and brief quote because it was right in front of my nose. In another study, chronic procrastinators who set a specific time to complete a task were 8 times as likely to follow through. So, I mean, the studies that they quote are fascinating, and I do recommend this book, again, called Be Excellent at Anything, because it really starts to get to some of the core stuff. I mean, it's obvious things, a lot of it, but it's going, hey, yeah, we know it's obvious, but what's stopping you from doing it anyways? And I'm familiar with that one. Okay, so the third point that they have is what we resist persist is what they call it. So they say that the key to building rituals is to focus on something that we do rather than something we continually try to resist doing. A diet, for example, works far better when you choose in advance exactly what you're going to eat rather than simply resisting tempting foods all day long. The power of a ritual is partly the fact that it's a clearly defined affirmative act. Make sense? So what you want to do is set, it's like setting a plan, game plan for the day when you get up. If you're doing it about food, then it's going to be, okay, so my game plan for today for food is this for breakfast, probably that for lunch, that for dinner. And I can speak to this one from personal experience lately, because I have been on this quest to lose weight. It's good for the back. It's good for me on a whole lot of levels. So I continue in that. And planning food for the day has a couple of big advantages. One, if I know I'm going out for dinner in the evening, I plan ahead on what I'm having for breakfast and lunch so that dinner can be had exactly the way I want it, but without any, you know, guilt or problems because I haven't exceeded my calorie allocation because I planned for it. It also means that you make sure that you have food on hand that you need to have because you thought about it ahead of time. It also means you don't have to think about it throughout the day, which means that more of your cognitive processes, if you will, are available for other things. Yeah, so you don't have to think about it. You're like, no, I got a plan for that. And you move on to the next thing that you actually want to think about. So it doesn't become overwhelming and compulsive and obsessive in your head. It just is what it is. You've already put your plan in motion. You're happy with your plan and you move on. So that's their next point. Next one, what do you want and what will you do to avoid getting it? So to quote them again, the fourth and perhaps most paradoxical key to building rituals is to expect resistance to them to arise along the way. The developmental psychologist William Perry put it wryly, when someone comes to me for help, he said, I listen very hard and ask myself, what does this person really want? And what will they do to keep from getting it? Homeostasis, derived from the Greek word for standing still, allows us biologically to maintain a stable internal environment despite challenges ranging from viruses to changes in temperature. Our automatic internal processes make this possible, but they also help explain why we resist change. We derive a sense of safety from doing what we've always done, even if it's suboptimal and even if it has the potential to damage us in the long run. Smoking, overeating, micromanaging, and constantly checking email can all serve as ways to diminish feelings of anxiety. In the short term, these behaviors provide a source of comfort and relief. They're helping to get us through our days and nights. We don't give them up easily, even when we recognize rationally that they're costly and dysfunctional in the long run. So they get into that of really looking at what is it that's holding you back. And I'm looking to see if they've got some other tips for you. But really it's getting down into that idea of there is always something that stops us from wanting to make the change. Some emotional issue is usually lurking there going, I don't want to change. I don't feel good about the change. And until you can really resolve that emotionally, it can be really hard to make those changes. So change is not an easy thing, but it's something at this time of year that we all like to think about. So you want to, when you're looking at change, you want to only pick one thing to look at to start off with. What is the biggest thing in your world you really actually want to actively change? How much work are you willing to put into it? Get into specifics. How exactly are you going to make that change? What is that change going to look like? Plan for those changes. And then look at what it is that you're putting up to stop yourself from getting there. Look at it, acknowledge it. One of their opening chapters is, we can't change what we don't notice. And we are very good human beings at not noticing things. The blind eye, oh my God, total favorite with me. I'm good at it too. Of ignoring what's most important, of ignoring what causes us discomfort, what causes us anxiety, what makes us unhappy. We turn away from it so quick, so easily. Sometimes we don't even register that we're feeling these emotions. We go so fast from it's there, I don't want to look at it, I'm over here and I'm eating a chocolate bar. I'm over here, I'm having a smoke. I'm over here, I'm watching TV. I'm over here doing anything but experiencing that uncomfortable emotion because it's uncomfortable. Yes, I'm a little soapboxy today. Sorry. So that's what we're like. So recognize that that's what we're like. And if you really want to make change, you really got to pay attention to what's going on. But you can do it. Change is not as hard as it may sound. It's about setting yourself up for success. It's about making it as easy on yourself as possible. Recognize your own habits. Can't stress that one enough either. If you are, you know, I was never the best with money, which is really funny because I work in kind of a financial job, but my personal money, whole different story. I didn't want to manage it at a basic level. I was not good at keeping track of things. So what I did as my first step, because sometimes, you know, it takes several steps to get you to the ultimate behavior that you want. I could not switch to simply being, you know, in charge of my money and good with it. That was not my first step. My first step was my spending money all went into a separate account from the account that I have for where I get paid and where my mortgage and all the bills come out of. So spending money, separate account. When it was gone. So that I couldn't, you know, spend money that was meant for bills. I couldn't go into my overdraft. I couldn't fuck myself over as easily anymore. But I didn't have to really change too much of my behavior. I just had to get used to the shift. And then, you know, as that got easier and better, then I added some new dimensions to how I was managing money. So being more aware of it. But it's a multi-stepped process. And you really have to give yourself the time and respect that you need in order to make those changes. Change is not easy. And do you really want it? It's really easy to go, I want to lose 10 pounds. Do you really want to lose 10 pounds? Considering everything that it means. Everything. Because we tend to go, oh, it's just about, you know, losing weight or eating less or exercising. Well, it's true, but it's always part of a bigger arena, right? And I'm focusing on food only because it's the most immediate one for me, because it's the one I've been working on this last year. And not to say that you need to lose weight. Weight is a personal choice. I've been down this road. Go listen to that episode. So I'm just using it because it's an easy example for me, and I think it's one that a lot of people understand. When you want to lose weight, you can go, you know, yeah, it's just about I need to exercise more, or I just need to eat less sugar. But there are reasons that you don't exercise as much. There are reasons why you eat that sugar. Beautifully, this book actually gets into a lot of why we do it. And it talks, when it gets into the physical side of things, of how we sustain ourselves physically. And there's healthy sustaining of our physical state, and there's the unhealthy sustaining of our physical state. And I'm looking that up now. So, like I said, they talk about pulsing between active and restful states, or active and passive states, in the kind of unhealthy way of doing it, where you're not really charging yourself well. We end up spiking our physical energy by using caffeine, sugar, simple carbohydrates, amphetamines, cortisol, which is a chemical within the body that responds to stress. And that we calm ourselves down, so that period of rest, which we need, and we get ourselves to it, but not through truly resting. We go what they call numb, because we use alcohol, sleeping pills, we overeat, we watch television, we take painkillers. These are ways of slowing down and recouping from all the crappy stuff that we did to ourselves. See, all those things are very familiar to me too, but they're not healthy things. On the flip side, if you're balancing things well and you're moving naturally between a state of being energized and being what they call chill or relaxed, and doing so deliberately and in a healthy way, so you energize yourself through lean proteins, complex carbohydrates, movement and exercise, yoga and stretching, playing and laughing. So these are things you do to energize yourself. And it's true, they do give you energy. But then you also, on the flip side, for chilling, you need to take regular breaks, nap, meditate, sleep, vacation. Our culture says if you're not doing and achieving, then you are failing. And damn it, we're witches, we're pagans, we are magical people. And I say we should not succumb to culture's idiocy. Break free of that stupid round of foolishness and recognize, just as we do in the cycles of the moon, the cycles of the season, we know how fucking Mother Nature works. She doesn't, like, grow shit 12 months of the year. We try and make her do that, and then she gets pissy on us. But she does not do that naturally. Her natural way, and that really healthy and productive way of managing the land so that you don't burn out the land either, involves rotating crops, of doing things seasonally, of changing things up, because Mother Nature likes variety, and she likes to move between activity and rest. And we need to remember that we need to do the same. That this is important. And this is, yes, I'm sliding off the topic of change a little, but this is also how you can start finding it easier to make changes. Because if you start exploring ways of energizing yourself and learning to relax, if you get into a better rhythm with yourself, making other changes can come easier, more naturally. So I'm going to leave it at that. I'm going to recommend that book again, Be Excellent at Anything by Tony Schwartz. And just think about what change, you might be interested in making. And you might not have one. It's okay. You don't always have to be changing things. But it's good to evaluate where you're at, and if there's something you really want to, big you want to change, or something small you want to tweak. You know, always be active with looking at yourself. Of course, then my brain goes, but wait, there must be passive afterwards. Well, that's because you need to integrate it. When you make changes, you need to pause, reflect, integrate it, review what went well, and then go forward and make another change. Cyclical. It's how we do so well. So I'm going to leave you with that. I'm going to take another little break and going to come back and talk about sleep, of all things. So I'm kind of keeping to a theme here. All right, enjoy the break, and I will see you on the other side. Thank you. episode 30 of Pennies in the Well is brought to you by the tarot card, the Wheel of Fortune. That's a good way to start the year. And I have company, crap. And the rune stone, really quickly, is Awar!
From where we stand between the stars above and the earth below, we encounter all the mysteries of magic, myth, and modern science. Join me, Oriya Helene, for Between the Earth and Stars, a new evolution of the show previously known as Media Astra Actera, a monthly podcast weaving together astrology and astronomy, mineralogy and metaphysics, magic, meditation, and mystical musings on life. You can find the show on iTunes or visit the Temple of the Earth and Stars at www.earthandstars.org. Bright and dark blessings be with you where you stand between the earth and stars.
I hope you enjoyed that little interlude, and that was the new promo from Oriya Helene, who has recently experienced a bunch of name changes from Oriya the Sphinx to Oriya Helene, and from Media Astra Actera to Between the Earth and Stars for the name of her podcast, which is in some ways not a name change because Between the Earth and Stars is the English form of Media Astra Actera. But still, changes nonetheless, and if you haven't checked out her show, I highly recommend it, and she's got some new changes going on, which are a lot of fun. So, I have company in the house now, so if I sound a little strange, over-anxious, or just plain old weirded out, that's because someone's actually listening to me record this. That's weird. I've had people here before, but they've been interactive in the experience, so, yeah. I would like to talk about sleep. And this is continuing on from the same book, Be Excellent at Anything, and just the power of sleep, how important it is to us. And it's one of the, it's a small change that I plan to make for 2012 of being more aware of my sleep patterns and more making the effort to actually get 8 hours of sleep a night. Thanks to the torturous start of 2011, I'm very aware that I do best with about 9 hours of sleep a night. That is my natural rhythm. I actually will sleep about 8.5 to 9 hours of sleep a night, every night, if given the opportunity to. That isn't quite workable in the, you know, workday world where you have to get up, drive to work, get to work, work, drive home from work, make food, clean, and do all the other stuff that, you know, living is supposedly comprised of. So it takes, all that takes time and doesn't leave necessarily as much time for sleeping as we'd like. What these people talk about is that sleeping is one of the best and biggest changes and improvements we can do for our lives. We sacrifice sleep too easily, and it's actually one of the biggest impacts on our quality of life is getting enough sleep. So that is my 2012 goal, is to actually try and get 8 hours of sleep a night, every night, which really just means enforcing a bedtime. Yes, I'm back to being 6 years old, but now at least I set my own bedtime. It's not my parents. So much more empowering this way. So I do want to read a little bit from the book about sleep so that you can get some of why I find this interesting and also important. So they say, if physical energy is the foundation of all dimensions of energy, sleep is the foundation of physical energy. The circadian rhythm refers to the biological processes that occur over a 24-hour cycle. We're genetically programmed to be awake during the day and to sleep at night. We operate best, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, when we align with that rhythm. This is something I totally agree with. For example, the hormone melatonin, which tends to induce sleep, is almost non-existent in our bodies during daytime hours and reaches its peak between 11 p.m. and 3 a.m. The same is true for our core body temperature, which reaches its lowest point in the middle of the night and its highest level during the morning. We challenge our circadian rhythms at our peril, whether we do so by working during the night, traveling across time zones, or failing to sleep sufficiently. And the consequences include extreme fatigue, compromised cognitive capacity, emotional instability, lower productivity, and greater susceptibility to illness. Those are a lot of impacts for something as simple as simply getting enough sleep. So this is why I consider it important enough to make you listen to me. Well, I'm not making you listen to me. I want to remind you, you are voluntarily not hitting the fast forward button right now. And I bet you're wondering why. Even I'm wondering why. Right, so sleep. They say no single behavior we've come to believe more fundamentally influences our effectiveness in waking life than sleep. And they go into a bunch of studies and stuff that happens. And various nasty things that result from a lack of sleep. Lack of sleep makes us more inefficient at work and more dangerous behind the wheel of a car. It undermines the quality of our lives and makes us more vulnerable to illness. It is also responsible for making us less able to respond creatively to problems and opportunities and less original, flexible, and divergent in our thinking and thus less likely to generate new ideas. It's killer, in other words. It is one of the things that will take you down on every level where you want to be great. And if you can make yourself great by simply getting the right amount of sleep a night, isn't that just the right thing to do? So they say that awareness is half the battle when it comes to sleep, both because most of us underestimate the cost of getting too little and because of the extraordinary value of getting enough. This recognition is the first step in making more sleep a priority. And what is more sleep? They're talking, I think it was 6 to 8 hours is optimal. More like 7 to 8 is better. Do not go less than 6 or you pay for it. And they had some really, here we go. 95% of us require at least 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night to be fully rested. If you're not getting that much, you're probably working at a suboptimal level. Lack of sleep, even over, say, 6 hours over a night for 3-4 nights, huge deterioration in what it is that you can actually handle and manage. So that is my goal for, well, one of them, but the one I'm actually going to share for 2012 is to work on getting enough sleep. You may recall I have given up caffeine a couple of years ago, and I did find mornings are really hard. Returning to work in the, well, I did it as a graduated return to work after my herniated disc, and it was so much easier to focus, aside from the drugs, because I was getting enough rest, and I absolutely could tell when I was back to a normal schedule, which did not involve getting enough rest, and how much harder it was to deal with things, and especially deal with mornings. And while I had awareness at the time that it was sleep-related, I still didn't make any changes. So, awareness, step one. Planning for the change, step two. Making the change, step three. That's where I'm headed. And that, lovely people, is going to be the end of this podcast. We're going to make it slightly shorter than normal. I hope you have a very marvelous New Year's. You're probably going to be listening to this afterwards. So I hope you had a marvelous New Year's and a great Yule, and that you start off this second of however many New Year's you happen to celebrate in the year with joy. So blessings of the deep and wild to you, and I'm going to leave you with the only other New Year's song that I had that had New Year's in the title, and it's a lullaby by Cyndi Lauper. Bless be.